All right, just a pleasure, Erev Tov, everybody, and to the Americans, of course, happy Thanksgiving. Us in Canada having a regular work day, but we know that's a big day and there's much to be thankful for, despite everything, or maybe because of everything. And it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Adler, who, as you just heard, is after 42 years as the rabbi of Rinat Yisrael, the congregation in Teaneck, is now the rabbi emeritus. And I believe you're still the head of TABC, the high school in that he started, the Yeshiva High School, the Torah Academy of Bergen County, I believe it stands for. And it's Rabbi Adler, of course, a leader of the Orthodox community for many, many years and the close student of Rav Soloveitchik. And I believe tonight's topic is going to be on Rav Soloveitchik on Parshat Vayeshev. So with that, a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Adler. Bakasha.
Thank you so much. Okay, Rabotai. I heard this shiir from the Rav in 1981, and when I heard the shiir, I could not believe what I had just heard. It was one of the most creative, original thoughts on the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev and its impact upon the rest of Sefer Bereishis. So if you will open up your Chumash or the source sheet to Bereishis Perek Lamed Zayin, the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, we'll read the first pasuk, and then I'll present four questions which the Rav asked on the opening pasuk and one or two other sources, and then present his quite original idea. The Torah states, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz megurei aviv be'eretz kina'an. Yaakov is dwelling in the land of the residence of his father, Be'eretz Kanaan. So what happened here is Yaakov engaged in confrontation with his brother at the beginning of the previous parsha, Parshas Vayishlach, and he survived that confrontation. He continues to build his family. And now the Torah says he's ready to settle in Eretz Kanaan. So question number one is, what exactly does the phrase Be'eretz Megurei Aviv mean? What does it add to the fact that Yaakov is about to dwell in Eretz Kanaan, or is dwelling in Eretz Kanaan? We know that Yitzchak lived in Eretz Kanaan, and in fact, nowhere else in Sefer Bereishis, when we make reference to Avraham or Yitzchak or Yaakov, does the Torah describe Eretz Kanaan as the residence of this person or that person. The pasuk should state quite simply, Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Kanaan, Ele Todot Yaakov Yosef. That's the way the Torah should have read. Why and what is the intention of the phrase Be'eretz Megurei Aviv. Be'eretz Megurei Aviv. A second question is based on a midrash which Rashi cites in Pasuk Bet. It is a very famous Rashi, very famous midrash, and it contains five words. What does it mean, Vayeshev Yaakov? Bikesh Yaakov leshev bishalva. Yaakov wanted to dwell bishalva, in peace, quiet, tranquility. So if the Torah were to write a pasuk describing an individual today, how would the Torah describe this desire to leishev bishalva? What modern words would the Torah use about that particular person and his family? How would the Torah describe it? Anybody?
Shalom achshavnik.
What was that?
Shalom achshavnik.
Nah, that's a little too sophisticated. And that's someone maybe in Medinat Yisrael. Right here, a typical reaction of an American family. And they come to the twilight of their life. So what do they want to do? What do they want?
Retire. Inherit Israel.
That's from our perspective. I'm talking about the American public.
Florida.
Bikesh Yaakov Leishay beFlorida. Miami, Hollywood. Is that what the Medrash is trying to tell us? Bikesh Yaakov Leishay beShalva. He wanted to take up residence as a retiree in Florida. Is that what he wanted to do? What exactly does the Medrash have in mind? Bikesh Yaakov Leishay beShalva. That is question number three. Question number three, you have to move back to the end of Parshas Vayishlach, chapter 36, verse 31. Chapter 36, verse 31. The pasuk states, "Ve'ele hamilachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei milach melech libnei Yisrael." Here are a list of the Edomite kings before the rise of a Jewish king for Bnei Yisrael. That's what the Torah says. This entire chapter 36 is devoted to the descendants of Esav. And now, amongst the descendants of Esav, there were eight kings who ruled in this region before the rise of a Jewish king. Rabotai, who is the first Jewish king?
Shaul,
exactly, Shaul. So you know that Shaul was how many hundreds of years away from them? We have at least 210 years in Mitzrayim, 40 years wandering around in the desert. There were all of the Shoftim recorded in Sefer Shoftim after Yehoshua's reign. And then comes the rise of the first king, Shaul.
What about Vayhi Bishurun Melech? That's Moshe Rabbeinu.
That's correct. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. But I don't think that the Torah has in mind that Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be the king of this region. He was never the king of Eretz Canaan, Moshe Rabbeinu. Never. So what exactly, so what question would you like to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam if he were to walk into the session now? What would you like to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam? Why is it necessary for us to say that these are the Edomite kings before a Jewish king came to power? Jewish king is a long way off. Why is that necessary in this particular parsha, Perek Lamed Vav, of Sefer Bereishis, to make this particular point? You want to write about the Edomite kings? That's fine. Eila hamelachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom, very nice. Then continue. Vayimloch be'Edom, Bela ben Ba'or, Yoav, Husham, and so on and so forth. What does the phrase lifnei milach melech libnei Yisrael mean in relationship to Parshas Vayishlach and Parshas Vayeshev? What relevance does it have to the story that is unfolding right here and now? That is question number three. Question number four is based on the Haftarah selection of Parshat Vayeshev. The Haftarah selection of Parshat Vayeshev. It is taken from the book of Amos, and Amos is moaning or bemoaning the fact that Am Yisrael have engaged in transgression, and a particular serious transgression has been Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik, that they sold Yosef the Tzadik for a coin, for coins, Esrim Kasef, and they sold Evyon Ba'avur Na'alayim. They sold Yosef, described as a poor person, on behalf of a pair of Nike shoes. That's what they bought. An Air Jordan pair of shoes. And that transgression, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Ashivenu, I'm not going to be quick to forgive them. And the Haftarah concludes with the following pasuk. Aryeh Sha'ag Milo Yira, when the lion comes in and roars, will you not be petrified? But yet, Hashem Elokem Diber, Mi Lo Yinave, God has spoken. Why have you not taken his words seriously? That's the end of the Haftarah of Parshat Vayeshev. When the lion roars, of course you will be afraid. Mi Lo Yira. But yet, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks, nobody seems to take it very seriously. It's not taken as a serious prophecy. Why does the Torah end with, why does the Haftarah end that way? Particularly in light of the fact that we have a rule recorded in Maseches Megillah concerning Haftarot, that every Haftarah must necessarily conclude on a positive note. There are no exceptions to that rule. Even if you have the Haftarah of Shabbat Chazon, the Shabbat before Tisha B'Av. So I'll remind you of what the Haftarah describes. It describes the destruction of Yerushalayim, or the forthcoming destruction of Yerushalayim. And then the last pasuk says, Sedek b'mishpati pader, v'shaveha b'tzdaka. There's going to be a redemption. And there's going to be an ingathering, a return of all of those who have been dispersed. They're going to be returning to Yerushalayim. Why is there such a conclusion, such a positive note? Because that's the rule of the Haftarah. The Haftarah is designed to point out weaknesses, but always to leave on an encouraging note. Not to allow us to wallow in our transgression and depression that things can never change. Things can always change. But yet the impression generated with the Haftarah of our Parsha this week is that no, that there is no hope for Am Yisrael. And as it says in the opening pasuk, that for certain Averot, I will never forgive them. And the one that he mentions blatantly is Al Michram Bakesef Tzadik Ve'evyon Bavurna Alayim. Why is this so harsh that it does not merit any type of positive, rejuvenating phrase to keep our spirits high and looking forward to a change from the destitute and desolation that we experienced during Churban. So that is four questions, and I'm going to repeat the four questions. Number one, what does the phrase Be'eretz Megurei Aviv contribute? We know that Yitzchak lived in Eretz Canaan. Should have said Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Canaan. End of discussion. Number two, Rashi quotes the Midrash, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev Bishalva. Yaakov wanted to dwell in peace. In peace. And so what exactly does that mean? What does it mean that he wanted it leishev b'shalva? Three, why does the Torah, when recording the kings of Edom in this region, make a reference to Shaul HaMelech, Lifnei Melech Melech b'Yisrael? Why is that significant in our story? And number four, why does Parshas Vayeshev stand out as the only Haftarah for which there is no conclusion of positivity, no conclusion of return to Eretz Yisrael, but rather remaining in the doldrums on account of the fact that we sold Yosef for a pair of shoes. So the Rav suggested the following novel interpretation. I have not seen anybody ever suggest this in terms of an interpretation of something that was recorded in the Torah in Parshas Lech Lecha, Perek Tetvav, a very famous episode identified as the Brit Bein HaBitarim, the covenant that was formed between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avraham at the time when he cut up an animal and they walk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avraham walks in between the two pieces of meat. It's called the Brit Bein HaBitarim. So Pasuk Yud Gimel reads, Vayomer le'Avram, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram, Yado ateita, I want you to know, ki ger yihyeh zaracha be'eretz lo lohem. Your children will be a stranger in a land that does not belong to them. Va'avadum, and they will work. Ve'inu otam, they will afflict them for arba meot shana, for 400 years. Ve'gam et hagoy asher ya'avodu, and the nation which enslaves them, don anoichi, I'm going to deal with them. Ve'achareichen yetzu b'rechush gadol, and after you leave this country, you will leave with enormous wealth. Okay. So Rabotai, does HaKadosh Baruch Hu identify for Avram where his son or children or grandchildren are going to be slaves in a land that does not belong to them? Does HaKadosh Baruch Hu identify which land is it? No, he doesn't. I will guarantee you, I'll give you 100-to-1 odds that everybody here in this room and online believes that which is the land that is being referenced? Mitzrayim. Obviously Mitzrayim. Because that's what happened. Yaakov and his children went down to Mitzrayim. Yosef, the very first one in this parsha, Parshas Vayeshev. That's what everybody thinks. Even though it does not say the word Mitzrayim, and there is no reference to Mitzrayim anywhere here in the text. So now put your seatbelt on, and listen to how the Rav interpreted this pasuk. Yaakov believed that he had just fulfilled the promise made to Avraham at the Brit Bein Absarim. Yaakov believed that he was the person who fulfilled the promise made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where was Yaakov throughout the duration of Parshas Vayishlach? With whom was he interacting with so long in Vayetze and Vayishlach? With whom did he spend so many years? Who?
Lavan.
Exactly. Lavan. Now, when Yaakov went to Lavan, he had nothing, absolutely nothing. And he was living in a land that did not belong to him. And he worked like a horse. And in fact, the Torah says that he worked for 20 years. He rarely had any sleep at night. Lavan worked him day and night. And when he left Lavan after 20 years, he left Berechush Gadol with enormous wealth. He had 4 wives, 13 children, enormous cattle, which is unbelievable. And he was enormously wealthy. So as Parshas Vayeshev is beginning, we read the opening pasuk and say, Vayeshev Yaakov, where? Be'eretz Canaan. I'll translate the middle phrase in a second. Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Canaan. Where is Yaakov planning on settling down now? Where? In Eretz Canaan. Why is he planning on settling in Eretz Canaan? Because that is the land which HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised Avraham that his children or grandchildren will live in after they spend time in Eretz Lo Lahem, after they spend time being enslaved and being afflicted. Yes, it says 400 years. I'm aware of that. But we were never 400 years anyplace. Even in Mitzrayim, we were only 210 years. So what do we say in the Haggadah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu chishev es haketz. He somehow calculated that the 210 years will be the equal of the Arba Meot Shana. Suggests the Rav that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be chishev es haketz, to calculate that 210 is the equivalent of 400, he can do the same thing of 20. 20 years in Lavan's house is ke'ilu 400 years in Lavan's house. And therefore, Yaakov, having believed that that part of history is now being fulfilled via him, he returns to Eretz Canaan, and his dream and hope, and based on the promise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is that he will be in Eretz Canaan permanently, never to leave Eretz Canaan again. And how does the Torah communicate that phrase, that idea? By using the phrase Be'eretz Megurei Aviv. How many times did Yitzchak leave Eretz Canaan?
Zero,
exactly. So the Torah is now saying Yaakov's return to Eretz Canaan is going to be exactly the same as Eretz Megurei Aviv, as the living of Yitzchak in this particular land of Eretz Canaan. Never, never, never will, never will would happen that Yaakov is going to leave again. Yaakov was going to leave again. So the so what's happening here is that this is Yaakov's intention. So the first question which we asked is, why does it say Be'eretz Megurei Aviv? So I just answered that, because it's a very powerful way of saying that as Yaakov returns, he is never going to be leaving. And the second question, what does Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Bishalvam mean? It has nothing to do with Florida or California or Hollywood. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. How? What is happening? What is happening? Yaakov plans on going to Eretz Canaan and to Leshev Bishalvam, to come back to Eretz Canaan for the purpose of setting up the first government of Israel. Medinat Yisrael. That's what Yaakov is planning on doing. Establishing a homeland for which hopefully he will never have to leave, and live as a full-fledged government. As a full-fledged government. So if it's a full-fledged government, what is one of the things that he is obligated to do as a full-fledged government? You have to establish a government. And the government which Yaakov was about to establish right here and now was a monarchy. And who is going to be the Melech of Am Yisrael? Yosef. Yosef is going to be the Melech of Am Yisrael. And for this reason, he makes Yosef, as recorded in Pasuk Gimel, he makes Yosef the Asalo Kitonet Pasim. He makes him this multicolored coat. a cult of royalty. Of royalty. And I undoubtedly, he tells Yosef about the plan. He tells Yosef about the plan. However, they do not, he does not tell the brothers. He does not say one word to Reuven and Yehuda and Gad. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So Yosef now gets a little aggressive and he shares with his brothers his dreams. Why does he suddenly have a dream about people bowing down to him? Because El Papo, Yankele, told him that that's what's going to happen. That's his plan. Yosef is going to be the Melech of Yisrael. So therefore he sees bundles of grain and everybody's bundle is bowing down to him. And they said, does that mean, Yosef, we're going to bow down to you? Are you going to rule over us? So they hated him even further. Yosef then shares with them a second dream where the sun and the moon and the 11 stars are bowing down to him. And lo and behold, look at Yaakov's reaction. Yaakov is a little annoyed at him. He says, what's this about the dreams? But then in Pasuk Yeralef, the Torah says, Vayikanu bo echav, his brothers were jealous, but ve'aviv shomar et hadavar. Ve'aviv shomar et hadavar. What does that mean? It means that his father took it seriously. You know why he took it seriously? Because he is the one who planted the idea, the seed, in Yosef's mind. Yosef would never have dreamt about kingdom and people bowing down to him unless his father had put him up to it, as I said before. And it's exactly what happened. Yaakov told this to Yosef because this was part of Yaakov's dream. I am the one who fulfilled Geir Zaracha Beretz Lolohem. I was the one who was fulfilled Va'avadum. I was the one who fulfilled the Inu Osam Arbamei Oshana. And I am the one who is Va'acharechein Yetzu B'Ruchush Gadol. And as a result, I now am taking the liberty of moving back to Eretz Yisrael, taking up residence in a permanent fashion, and then living the rest of my life in Eretz Yisrael, Bishalva. This now explains question number 3. Why does the Torah say, Eile ha-milachim asher molchu be'eretz Edom lifnei milach melech b'Yisrael? Before Jewish king. So I took a bet that everybody here, in terms of defining who that Jewish king is, you'll tell that to your grandchildren. Of course, it means Shaul. Said the Rav, Rabotai, who is the Melach, Lifnei Melach Melech B'Yisrael? Who does it refer to?
Yosef.
That's what the Pasuk means. And that's why this section of the Torah is indeed so relevant. That's why it is so relevant as a section of the Torah. Why? Because we now know that Yaakov put him up to this, and the Torah, in its unusual fashion, is now telling us that Yosef is going to be the next king. So I'm going to let you know who the Edomite kings in this region were. Lifnei Melach Melech Lifnei Yisrael. Wow. Wow. Now, everybody knows that Yosef did not wind up to be the king. Who wound up to be the king for Am Yisrael? Who wound up to be the king? Yehuda. So now open up your Chumash to chapter 38, the next parrot, chapter 38. And 38 is the only chapter from now, from chapter 37, the beginning of Vayeshev, until the end of Sefer Bereishis, which is chapter 50, which is an interruption of the narrative. The narrative is uninterrupted from 37 all the way to 50. From 37 till 50, end of Sefer, end of Parshas Vayechi, end of Sefer Bereishis, that is the end of the narrative, no interruption whatsoever, except for chapter 38. Except for chapter 38. And if you glance at 38, tell me who is the subject of chapter 38. Who is the subject of chapter 38?
Is it Yehuda?
Don't ask me, just say it.
Yehuda and Tamar.
Yes, it's Yehuda. So now I ask you a question. Why would the Torah interrupt the narrative from 37 until 50? Why would the Torah interrupt right here in chapter 38, the second chapter of this uninterrupted 13 chapter unit? Why would the Torah suddenly interrupt it with Yehuda?
Because they sold Yosef and now everything's going in another direction.
Good. So I want to just give you the imagery which the Rav gave so we can see what's happening. And he said, make believe you're at a Broadway play. Okay, you're at a Broadway play. And the people on stage are the people on stage in chapter 37. So Yaakov's on stage, Yosef's on stage, the brothers are on stage. Fine. Brothers on stage. Now, as the first act is coming, chapter 37, the first scene is coming to an end, and the curtain is about to close, somebody comes and he stands in the front of the stage. And when you stand in the front of the stage and all the other actors are frozen at the back of the stage, what does the director intend to do by bringing the next actor to the front of the stage and everybody else is back in the back like in frozen animation? What is the director's intention?
Refocus your attention.
To whom?
On this new character.
But who is he talking to?
The audience.
Only the audience. Not the characters behind him. In fact, there might be a little dimming lights of the characters who are on stage for the first scene at this time. So after Yaakov dreams up his plan, and shares it with Yosef, and Yosef shares it with his brothers, comes along the editor of the Chumash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and inserts chapter 38 as if to tell us, the audience, Yaakov thinks Yosef is going to be the first king. But I'm telling you a little secret. It's not Yosef at all. Who's going to be the first king? It's going to be Yehuda. And therefore, the editor of the Chumash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right here, lets us know, the audience, the players on stage, have no clue what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying at this time. They're going to play out the rest of Sefer Bereishis in this beautiful play on Broadway called Genesis. But they're not going to hear the director's message that he shares with us, giving us a glimpse that somebody else is going to be entertained, is going to be identified as the Melech of Yisrael, and Yaakov's dreams will go down the drain. Down the drain. So after chapter 38, we get this whole story about Yehuda. Whole story about Yehuda. It has nothing to do with the narrative from 37 until the end of Sefer Bereishis. So now if you'll do me a favor and go to chapter 42 for a minute, verse 8. Chapter 42, verse 8. The scene here is as follows. The famine intensifies. Famine intensifies. And Yaakov, as reluctant as he is obligated, compelled, coerced to send his children to secure food in Mitzrayim. So he sends them. The Torah tells us Yosef is obviously the viceroy in Mitzrayim. And they come down and they encounter him. And Yosef speaks to them harshly. And now I'm going to read to you Pasuk Chet. Listen carefully. Vayaker Yosef et Echav. Yosef recognized his brothers. Vehem, however, they, lo hikiruhu, they did not recognize him. So Rashi says, you know why they didn't recognize him? Because he grew a beard. Okay. I'm not saying it's not right. It's possible that he did grow a beard. But the Rav now suggests something far more powerful than the reason why Yosef recognized his brothers and they didn't recognize him is much more to do than growing a beard. And the Rav said, Yosef understood that the first dream has just come true. What was the first dream that he shared with his brothers? That the what was that?
The sheaves of wheat. Their sheaves of wheat would bow down to his.
Yes, the bags of wheat. Right, we're bowing down to him. Whoa. Look what just happened. The brothers came down to Mitzrayim seeking bags of grain. And what did they do? They bowed down to him. So Vayaker Yosef et Echav. Yosef recognizes that the message, the dream, the vision, the hope that Yaakov had planted in Yosef's ears and heart is unfolding. And that's why he recognized it. He understood that this is not just an encounter between some people who came from Canaan and came down to Egypt for grain. This is much more so. This is the getting of grain, but by virtue of getting the grain, the brothers are fulfilling the first dream that they are bowing down to Yosef, the leader. And that is going to be the symbol that when they get back to Eretz Canaan, Yosef is supposed to take over the leadership and act as the king. But Vehem Lohikiru, they had no clue what was going on. They thought this guy was an Egyptian leader and he's just making life miserable for them. And therefore they had no idea, no understanding whatsoever of what was unfolding. And therefore the Torah inserts this. Vayaker Yosef et Echav. It has much more to do with growing a beard, but rather on a much more profound level that there is a fulfillment perhaps of the first dream, which would enable Yaakov's hope and vision to identify Yosef as the Melech of Am Yisrael. This continues even further. If you go now to chapter 45, which is the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, not still the middle of 44. Perek Mem Dalet Pasuk Yudchet, the beginning of page 44. Pasuk Yudchet in Perek Mem Dalet. So what happened here before Vayigash is that Yaakov is coerced by the deteriorating conditions of the famine to send his favorite son Binyamin down to Mitzrayim. Something which he was very reluctant to do, extremely reluctant to do. But if you want to eat, you have to have food. And if you want to have food, you got to listen to what Yosef says. Fine. So he sends him down. Everybody knows the story. Yosef plots and tells all of his servants, fill up their bags with grain, and then take my becher, which I make kiddush on every Friday night, and put it into Binyamin's bag. So they do so. They find the time to come home. Everybody says goodbye, and they're traveling. And suddenly they are pursued by Egyptian warriors, and they make the claim that someone stole the goblet of Yosef. And they said, that's impossible. We'll show you all our bags. And lo and behold, the bag is in Binyamin's, the goblet is in Binyamin's in bag. They come back to Mitzrayim, and Yosef says, the guy who stole it is going to have to remain here as my slave. So who do you think decides to stand up for Yosef?
Yehuda.
For Binyamin. Who?
Yehuda.
Who?
Yehuda. Yehuda.
Not Reuven, not Dan, not Naphtali, but only Yehuda. So the Medrash says, Kinei ha-melachim noadu yachdav. The Medrash compares that Yosef and Yehuda battling it out as to whether or not they're going to bring Binyamin back to Eretz Canaan is the battle royale of two kings. Noadu yachdav shnei milachim. Two kings. One who was promised to be king by Yaakov, and one who was destined to be king by decision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the decision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, as a result of the fact that these two exhibited qualities of leadership and kingdom, that is why it is not Dan or Naphtali or Reuven or anybody else. But it's Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda is going to take on Yosef, because ultimately that's going to be the final battle in determining who will be the Melech of Am Yisrael in Eretz Canaan, in Eretz Yisrael. Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Specifically Yehuda. Specifically Yehuda. As we know, at the end of Yaakov's life, as the Torah records in chapter 48 of Sefer Bereishis, we know that Yaakov had no choice but to agree to the decision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when he delivers the Birchat Yaakov, the brachot, which we call Birchas Yaakov, in chapter 49, verse 8, the Torah tells us, Yehuda, ata yoducha achacha, your brothers will praise you. And in Pasuk Yud, lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda. The rule of authority, kingdom, will never be taken from Yehuda. So it is here who Yaakov, in a vision, which is a sense of nevuah, is echoing the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yankala, I'm sorry, it's not going to be Yosef, but it's going to be Yehuda. But it's going to be Yehuda. And that's why the Haftarah, the Haftarah concludes with such a negative statement. Why? Because the factor that led perhaps to HaKadosh Baruch Hu changing his mind and not allowing Yaakov his wish that it should be Yosef as the Melech of Am Yisrael is because of that famous two words, sinat chinam, between the brothers and Yosef. We understand why Yaakov wanted to make Yosef the king. I understand it. You understand it. Yosef is the eldest son of his cherished wife, Rachel. If not for all of the shenanigans of Lavan, Yaakov would have married one woman, Rachel, had his two children, and that would have been it. And that is it. But the brothers, now that he has four wives and 13 children, the brothers are not happy that their mother, either Leah, or let's say, forget about Bilhah and Zilpah, but Leah, who had six children, should not be considered the head mother in order to determine who might be the leadership of Am Yisrael, whether it be Yehuda or anybody else. So because of this factor that we're still suffering from today, of having sinat chinam, whether it's about the brothers not agreeing with Yaakov's attempt to appoint Yosef as the king, or anything else, we're still living under the horrors of sinat chinam. And for that reason, Amos, the prophet, cannot end on a positive note. Because in his time, he didn't notice any improvement. And through prophecy, he notices, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu shares with him, that this episode, this type of inability to get along with one another, is going to highlight and characterize the behavior of Am Yisrael for additional thousands of years. And therefore, Amos just says, if the lion roars, everybody will be afraid. You will hear it. And you will understand what the consequences are. But Hashem Elokim Diber, when God speaks, Mi lo yinave, will anybody ever take him seriously as the ultimate prophet? Nobody. Nobody. Because they can't get along with one another. So in this particular way, the Rav reinterpreted the opening pasuk of Parshas Vayeshev, made a bold suggestion about the fulfillment of the Brit Bein HaBitarim in chapter 15 of the book of Bereishis, claiming that it is not Mitzrayim as initially understood. Maybe eventually that's what happened. But initially Yaakov feels that it is his opportunity to make decisions, to dwell in Eretz Canaan, to appoint the next king of Israel, who will be Yosef, the son of his cherished wife. And unfortunately, the brothers are not ready for it. And for this reason, Yaakov fails in this regard. And ultimately, the handpicked choice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yehuda, is offered the kingdom. In another lecture, the Rav gave another shir trying to explain, based on certain sources, what are the differences between Yehuda and Yosef, and why HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that it would be more appropriate to have the tipus of a Yehuda king than a Yosef king. But that's for a different occasion, a different time. So what I'm going to do now is just take a look at the chat, because I see there are seven entries. You'll see what the comments are. And I just want to, before I even look at them, when somebody presents something like this, don't forget, ultimately it's drush. It might be the pshat, it might be, but ultimately it's drush. So you don't like the drush? Don't like the drush. You're not compelled to accept the Rav's interpretation, not compelled to accept it. So if you have a question or two in which the theory doesn't fit, okay. Like we say in Yiddish, mishtarpnish, v'nakasha shtarpnish. Nobody dies from a question. So let me see. Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, Janine. Isn't it also there's children with a dor rivi'i? Yes. That's why Yosef is the dor rivi'i. You have Avram is the dor rishon, Yitzchak is the dor sheni, Yaakov is the dor shlishi, Yosef is the dor rivi'i. So although it is being initially, because the pasuk says in Parshas Lech Lecha, Mr. Cohen, you are right, Vidor Rivi'i Yeshuvu Hena. So here I would say it's Yaakov as the third generation, leaving it for the fourth generation to take over Eretz Canaan. Why was Jacob so offended by the dream of Jacob and Mal Mambanganta? I mean, the dream of Yosef. Why was he so offended? So, first of all, he is trying to placate his other children. He sees what's happening, and it's not unfolding the exact way in which he intended. So Yaakov has to try to calm things down. And that's why he does rebuke Yosef to some extent. And I'm sure what's running through Yosef's mind is, why is he rebuking me? He put me up to this. But it does say after the rebuke, Ve'aviv shomar et hadavar, father still took this seriously, didn't give it up. And as a result, it is still, it's still possibility. Then somebody said that the Ksonis Pasim is connected to the Chur Karpas Megillus Esther, which is royalty. That is an excellent remark. That's an interesting point about the interpretation of dreams. It's not primarily a form of communication from God, but more of in line with Freud or Adler, no relation. Now, that's an interesting point. Yes, you could say that the Rav, you know, had a tendency to side with that. As I said at the beginning, Annie Garmazia said, I never saw any interpretation remotely similar to this, other than when I heard from the Rav in First Hall, Parshas Vayeshev in 1981. So can I review the answer to the four questions? Yes, I'll do it briefly. The question was, why does it say Be'eretz Megurei Aviv? Answer, because Yaakov's intention coming back to Eretz Canaan is to live permanently, never to leave. And that was the quality of Yitzchak's residence, Eretz Megurei Aviv. Number two, what did it mean? Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. It's not that he wanted to go to Miami to retire. He wanted to establish a independent nation with Malchus Yisrael. And his intention was to anoint Yosef as the king. Question number three. Why does it say that here are the list of the eight Edomite kings? Lifnei Melech Melech B'Yisrael. Before a Jewish king. Jewish king, that's Shaul. That's 450, that's hundreds of years later. Why mention that here? Answer. The king is not Shaul. The king is Yosef. Because Yosef is about to be identified by Yaakov as the king. And the fourth question was, why does the Haftarah end on such a negative note? Because unfortunately, the way the brothers resolved the issue was by selling Yitzchak for a pair of Nike shoes. And for that idea of sinas chinam, of brotherly not accepting one another, despite the fact that it would mean acknowledging the power and rise of someone else, that has been with us for too many thousands of years and still plagues us today. And for this reason, to some extent, we have not yet been blessed with the ultimate Geulah.
Thank you very much. Hopefully, I that's the big problem we have, the Sinat Chinam. Yes. Thank you very much. The one just mentioned, of course, tomorrow morning, I sent it out already. Tomorrow morning, of course, I'll be in Mashiach. We're switching the time from 9:30 to 9:00. My schedule has changed. So tomorrow, our sitter, our shir on the sitter will be at 9 a.m. Eastern time. And we're going to move. We're in the middle of Birchat HaShachar, taking us all this time, but we're going to go to Al Anisim. We're going to discuss Al Anisim tomorrow, obviously, in connection, in preparation for Hanukkah. So that's shir tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then, of course, next week, Rabbi Liebtag kicks off. He'll also be talking on Hanukkah at 11:15, and then our regular style of shirim. Thank you, Rabbi Adler. My only question is, Perek Lamed Vav has many, many kings. Obviously, okay, the question doesn't bother me so much, but if it's Yosef, there's not enough time. If there's Shaul, in other words, these are the list of kings that these kings did not rule before Yosef, of course.
Right.
Right. In other words, I don't know the question, whatever, it doesn't bother me too much, but
good point. Good point.
Okay, but just raising it. But obviously, ain't sholi mal hadrush. But yes. Okay, listen, one of my early introductions to the Rav, of course, reading his book on the Chamesh Drashot, he gave it the Mizrahi Convention, and talked about, of course, Yosef is the dreamer, and Yosef is the brothers, and the Agud and the Mizrahi. Yosef represented, saw a new style of life coming, and we can't do the old paths of our fathers. Egypt is science and technology, and the world got to progress, and the brothers say, we just followed the Masorah from our parents. You know, of course, that famous drasha of the Rav, but that's the other, another story for another talk on Yosef and the Rav.
That was the first time I ever heard the Rav. It was at the Mizrahi Convention. At the Lido Beach Hotel, there were no seats. I sat on a radiator for 2.5 hours as he presented that share.
Obviously, in Yiddish. In 1981, he was speaking English.
Right, but it was in Yiddish. That one was Yiddish,
100%. Right, right. And your Yiddish was obviously good enough to understand it.
Yes, I went to Yeshiva High School that only all the Rabbeim only spoke Yiddish.
Really? What school was that?
Kamenitz and Mesifta of Borough Park.
Aha, okay, cool. All right.
My father told me, just learn the Gemara. Don't pick up any hashkafa from them.
Okay. I guess it worked.
Yes.
Jay, Rabbi Adler's in Borough Park, right?
Yes. I grew up in Borough Park. Yes.
I was telling that to Rabbi Kelman.
Yes. I came to Borough Park to visit my grandmother growing up. That's when I came to Borough Park. And then until they moved to Flatbush in the late 70s. But when I was a little kid, they lived in Crown Heights. Then they moved to Borough Park, and then they moved to Flatbush. Yes. But we used to come, of course, I came in the summers. We'd come visit. You know, we were in Toronto. And anyways, okay.
Can I make a comment here?
Shane and
Dan. Yeah. Someone talk on the shear.
Yes, can I make a comment? Rabbi Adler, I sat in front of you on this medrash. I'm Tommy Klein.
Oh, of course. Hi, how are you?
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Long time no see.
Yes.
All right, there we go. You know, okay. Anybody else want to say hello to people?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I used to go to Adler's class on the Chumash.
Okay.
On Wednesday afternoon, was it?
Every Wednesday, 12:30. Yes.
Yeah. It sometimes came with Sarah Allen.
Yes, from Englewood, yes.
Right.
Okay, well,
everybody have a wonderful Shabbos.
We'll let you go. Refuah Shleima on your leg, and Chanukah Sameach. Enjoy your retirement. And, of course, give our regards to Rabbi Strachler, of course.
We certainly will.
And, you know, Torontonian, making back in Rina. So, Bakasha, all the best, and everybody be well. I hope to see you soon. And please invite a friend to come and learn with us. And everybody have a wonderful night. And we don't see you before. Shabbat Shalom and Chanukah Sameach and all good things.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Bye-bye. Good night.